south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, here's something I bet you didn't know. United States men under 30 spend 2,000 hours a year on average playing video games. And most of them at the time have a porn window or two or three open on their computer or smartphone. All this according to a widely disseminated university poll. And get this, 50% of those guys under 30 are on prescription meds like SSRIs and smoke weed, not just on weekends or parties, but daily. Now, some of you might thinking, well, folly's a youth and all that. But guess what? In 20 years, these guys will be the next Biden's, Sanders, Pelosi's, and Maxine Waterheads. These guys, the under 30 crowd, will be running the country. Well, not the country I'm living in, but your country. Which begs the question, in fact, more than begs the question, how's your plan B coming? Oh, and before we seriously get started today, I thought this might amuse you. You know, Professor Gad Saad, he's one of my favorites. He's an evolutionary psychologist from Canada. He wrote the book called The Parasitic Mind. Well, he said recently on his podcast that ugly people are more likely to continue wearing COVID masks into the near future and beyond. He didn't just make that statement off the top of his head. He's got research to prove it. He quotes a study from an article called, quote, Self-Perceived Positive Facial Attractiveness Reduces Mask Wearing, a white paper from a publication called Frontiers in Psychology and Personality, which came out just 2 weeks ago. With three big studies showing basically that if you perceive yourself as ugly, you will keep wearing the COVID mask. So when you're walking along and you see some laggard still wearing a mask, he or she just might not be an uninformed idiot. There just might be a method to the madness. He or she might be bone ugly. We mustn't judge. All right, how about a little boots on the ground story? You ready for it? So it's Saturday night, last Saturday night. I'm walking down a busy street, a busy boulevard, lots of people walking by, nice restaurants, great people watching, one of my favorite things to do, acrobats, street musicians, people posing as statues, you know the drill, a party, fun, and entertainment area. So definitely a lot of foot traffic, and lots of guys and gals dressed up. It's Saturday night, date night, you know. The thing is, down here in Latin America, lots and lots of people do not have cars. The average man and woman, they don't have one. They use Uber or public transportation, chicken buses, even moto conchas, you know, those hideous motorcycle taxis. Not recommended, by the way, for man or beast. But anyway, usually people who don't have cars, on Saturday nights when it's date night, they'll meet up with their better half or their date in one of the central parks, the universal gathering place. Generally in the biggest central park in the area, where all the action is. In the Zona Rosa or Zona Viva areas, they're the areas where they have all the restaurants, discos, and stuff. Every big city and medium city has them. For example, in Guatemala City, that would be Zone 10. In the capital of El Salvador, San Salvador, that would be just called, basically, Zona Rosa. You tell a cab or Uber driver you want to go to the Zona Rosa, he knows exactly where to take you. In Guatemala, you just say, Zona Viva, please. Which means, translated, the live zone, Zona Viva, or the zone of life. And that's what it is, full of life. Lots of foot traffic, nice first world hotels, people dressed pretty nice all the time, restaurants and shopping everywhere. So anyway, I'm walking down the boulevard and there's two 20-something, young 20-something Latino guys right in front of me, dressed to kill, surely out to meet their dates, dressed to impress, all blinged out. You could smell the cologne overdose 10 feet away. Obviously, just got off a chicken bus in from the barrio, ready to meet the girls and go disco in, I suppose. Now, these two guys are maybe 6 feet in front of me. And suddenly, one of them inhales deeply, covers one of his nostrils, and blows a big wad of snot on the street. Great first impression, huh? Something you'd expect from a carny or white trash up in the States. Talk about a disgusting appetite killer. Anyway, the guy's 6 feet in front of me. He blows out a snot wad on the sidewalk. He slowed down to do it, so I quickly passed him and said, with some disgust, cerdo, grosero, which translates to You're a gross pig. And he just grunted like a Neanderthal. And that was the end of it, though you never know with a couple of guys exchanging a few terse words like that if it's going to escalate. I figured it wouldn't because there were a few other people in the area who saw it and were disgusted by it too. Now, normally, if I was in a barrio or a rough area town, you know, scruffy around the edges, I'd have held my tongue. You don't want to call out a guy in his own territory, right? But I was in sort of the international zone in this big city, and there was a tourist or transit cop on every corner, so I had that going for me, so I weighed my options in case that guy got mean. If anyone deserved some first world guff, that sorry excuse for a Homo sapiens sure did. And all the while I was thinking, I'm the guy with 1.3% Neanderthal blood. And really, I gotta tell you, I've never blown a wad out of my nose like that in my life. Now, I've seen a few gardeners and maintenance guys do it, and it's not pretty. I can only think it comes down to bad upbringing. What are their mothers teaching them? Hell, if I would have done that, my mother would have ripped my ear off. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this at all is because last night I was doing my power walk in a well-traveled pedestrian area, and a guy in front of me did exactly the same thing. That's two cerdos groseros in less than a week. He wasn't dressed to kill or anything. He was a bit more scruffy than the first guy. Obviously, it wasn't date night for him, but he was a 30-something guy, dressed fairly average or better. And I thought, what are the chances? Since I recall the last time I saw anyone do that up in the States was, I think, back in high school. So many years ago, I lose count. I remember the kids from the boonies and the trailer courts coming off the school bus. Some of those kids had the same kind of barnyard manners. I'll tell you one thing my mother drummed into all of us kids. Always carry three things, a pen, a pencil, and a Kleenex. And yep, a half a decade later, I still do. So what do you think? Think it's time to change that Kleenex? Maybe. Anyway, makes you wonder what kind of women would end up with guys like that. But again, we mustn't judge. Now, I know, you might be thinking, and I've had people send me emails wondering about this fact. They say, Johnny, sometimes we can tell when you're having a bad day, when you're just feeling kind of shitty. The show topics get kind of dark, and you're not as upbeat as you usually are. Who, me? Upbeat? Well, that's what some listeners say. I don't get it either. That said, you know, as per the name of the show, I try to balance out the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Well, in my defense, and in yours too, we all have bad days, don't we? But is it true you can tell when I'm not really into it? Seems so. No matter how much you like your job, sometimes you wake up in the morning and say, I don't want to do it today. Now imagine if you don't like your job and you wake up like that. Because that, you know, is the basic human condition. About 80% of people don't like their jobs at all. And really, when you think about it, that means 30 years of your life down the crapper, right? That's where that term, living for the weekend, came from. That's why a lot of my friends who are my age right now look pretty washed out, pretty ragged. Age and gravity have not been good to them. Life in a job they didn't like has taken its toll. And now they're a 5 at 50 statistic, remember that? By the time an American or first world person hits 50, he's generally on 5 prescription meds. Well, you know, some people, when they hit 50 or 60, they decide to start taking care of themselves. More power to you, man. It'll help. But you really have to start taking care of yourself when you're young, way before 50, to get the best results when you're pushing those twilight years anyway. Because, you know, when you hit 50, there's an old gambler saying that's relevant. You're not playing with the house's money anymore. Kind of scary, right? By the way, speaking of last Saturday night, there were some interesting happenings going on. I took an Uber from a restaurant at 1 o'clock in the morning. Of course, Saturday night in Zona Viva, people are out till 2, 3, and 4 o'clock partying. Lots of people walking around, girls in high heels, sexy as can be. In a lot of the big central parks, especially in the big cities, it's the Latino version of scooping the loop, even if you don't have a car. So anyway, I called an Uber, and guess what? It's 1 in the morning, we got to go cross town, probably 5 kilometers, maybe 3 miles, to get me home. Lots of twists and turns and intersection, it's a big city, and guess what? The guy ran 11, I counted them, 11 red lights. Now, I didn't say a word because that is a status quo. But because, you know, it was safety first for this guy, he was a conscientious fellow. He'd always beep the horn before he ran a light. Fair warning to the other guy, you know. An excellent habit, I'd say. Oh, and he managed to go the wrong way down 2 different one-way streets, which does have a habit of pissing off drivers who are rolling the right way. Of course, all in the interest of getting me to my destination safe and sound. Now, it's not like there was zero traffic. I mean, it wasn't like daytime traffic, but it's Saturday night traffic. Now, that's not to say that during the day they don't break all kinds of traffic laws. They do. But at night, man, the taxis and Uber drivers pull out all the stops. But what I really wanted to mention was a very odd thing happened to me. Never happened before in my life. That Saturday night. Which just goes to show you could be down here 30 plus years and still, shit will still happen. So anyway, right before the Uber picked me up, I was sitting on a park bench in a nice, safe, well-lit Central Park, you know, with a big fountain, great view at night, lots of trees, accent lights on the cathedral across the way, statues of genocidal dictators here and there with oversized heads. It makes you wonder, why did all the artists and sculptors back in the day make the bodies life-size, but the heads larger than life? Was it an inside joke, maybe making them all appear to be hydrocephalics? If it's a joke, it's one that keeps on giving. But I digress as usual. Anyway, there were maybe 20 park benches scattered around, and most of them had people on them, usually lovers smooching or holding hands. I mean, it was Saturday night. So anyway, I was sitting at one end of this park bench, and on the other end of the same bench, there were two smoochers. There was space for maybe three people in between us, but it was empty. No one was there. You know, you keep your distance, right? It's that personal space thing. You know, us first world people don't like to be crowded. So anyway, I had my trusty Kung Fu Smith collapsible umbrella with me and a little doggy bag from the restaurant I'd just been at, both along with my cell phone right next to me on that park bench. I called for an Uber, waited about 6 or 7 minutes. He came, got in the Uber. We'd gone about 3 or 4 blocks and I panicked. I left my damn cell phone on that park bench. And I told the driver to make the turn right away. Well, we were in a kind of a mini traffic jam. And by the time he made the number of turns necessary to get me back to the park, I'd say 7 or 8 more panicky minutes passed. And with every minute, I was thinking there was less and less probability that phone was still going to be there. I mean, really, a cell phone just laying on a bench like that? Well, the fastest way there took us to the other end of the park. I jumped out and ran the distance. Miracle of miracles, my phone was still there, sitting on that park bench, and that couple was still smooching. I was really shocked because I thought as I was running towards that park bench, there's about a 1% chance it was still there. It was like my own personal doomsday clock ticking 1 minute to midnight. Man, what are the odds? What are the odds? So then does that little episode portend a certain unstated honesty in the general Latino public? Well, I wouldn't bet on it. I'd say it was more of a lucky exception to the rule. Just like Vegas, the rules are tipped in the house's favor, but you gotta win sometime. So anyway, I got back in the Uber, calmed down a bit and thanked my lucky stars. And that's when I noticed how beat up this guy's car was. He had 5 cracked windows, and both, I'm talking both, of his side view mirrors were busted. The glass broken right out of them. And the shocks, man, there were no shocks. It was like Fred Flintstone's car. During that ride home, it got me thinking, what's it take to get qualified as an Uber driver? Well, first of all, you send him a picture of your cédula or passport. Then you take photos of your car, a shot of your car insurance policy, and a shot of the dashboard showing the mileage. I understand you're even supposed to take close-up shots of your tires to show they have rubber on them, and inside the trunk to show you've got a jack, a spare, and one of those mini fire extinguishers. That's what I've heard anyway. Just saying. Oh, and one more thing. This guy was driving a really tiny Hyundai. You know, there are some mini cars out there that only have 3 cylinders. I doubt they sell them in the States, but they have them down here. You know that, right? This was one of them, but hell, they get fantastic mileage. Only 3 cylinders. Why not? Now, you got to know in a car like that, the seats and legroom are scarce. It's like riding around in a go-kart or a cardboard box on wheels. And this guy, the driver, had a huge belly. He was wedged between a seat and his steering wheel. He could barely move at all, and I'm thinking, he's driving that thing hours and hours every day? Wow. The guy's a chiropractor's dream. Reminded me of one of expat Eddie's favorite sayings, as your waist expands, your brain shrinks. Oh, and by the way, when you sign up for Uber or one of those services like Lyft, you have to send them a shot of your cédula or your passport. Well, being an anonymous sort of guy, I sent a picture of my cleaning lady's cédula. And then I created a Start Mail alias email. They ask for that to send you a link. You click on it and the service starts. Now they got your email and they'll send you all kinds of junk mail, right? But not if you created a Start Mail alias, then you could just disappear it and you'll never get an ad. By the way, just looking at some stats from TransUnion, that's the credit reference agency that people use up in the States. They're saying the average adult American credit card debt stands at $5,800, up 18.5% from last year. And you're seeing articles everywhere that since the COVID crisis, an unprecedented number of people are living off their credit cards. That means since the average credit card interest rate is around 20%, if you paid just the minimum balance, it would take you 17 years to clear that average $5,800 in debt. And you'd have paid $8,200 in interest. And that's if you're an optimist and put no more charges on that card. You leave it stagnant. According to that report, 48% of Americans just pay the minimum balance every month. And close to 15% of Americans pay less than the minimum balance. That means they get additional penalties and fees added to their balance every month. You know, there's nothing like the feeling of being debt-free. How are your debt stress levels? How close are you to that ideal situation? Of course, having a house payment is the norm, even a car payment. However, I'd much rather have a used car in good condition and pay cash than follow the average American debt pattern and buy a new one and get sucked into a monthly payment for 3 to 5 years. The mindset there is not to worry about what other people think, and that's a big problem up in the States. What will your next-door neighbor with the new Lexus think when you bring home a used car? Time to get rid of that mindset, man. I know it's hard, but it's something to think about. If the day comes when you can say to yourself, who gives a shit, you're already winning the debt game. In fact, it's going in the opposite direction. It's getting much worse. Did you know in the fourth quarter of 2022, 202 million new credit cards were issued in the U.S., mostly the Gen Zers? The total number of active credit cards in the U.S. is 513 million. That means right now, 40% of all the active credit cards in the U.S. were issued in the last couple months. That's really bad news, especially since, according to many, many economic reports and social psychologists, Gen Zers are considered the most coddled and pampered generation of all time. Most of them have never held a job. Their parents always supported them, so they don't know the value of a dollar. And now they're all getting credit cards? And since these kids really have no credit rating, guess who's co-signing for them on those credit card apps? That's right, mommy and daddy, and sometimes brain-dead baby boomer grandma and grandpa. Considering that revolting development, we have to ask the same question. How's your plan be coming? All right, let's talk a little bit about Latin American health insurance and pre-existing conditions. You know, at my Latin American Insider seminars, I talk for a couple of hours about healthcare insurance down here, and I talk about that pre-existing condition dilemma. I get a lot of questions about that, you know. Because you see, when you sign up for a policy down here and fill out all the forms, and they'll be in Spanish, meaning you'll have to have a bilingual person help you with that, or an insurance broker who's bilingual. That's another thing your Latin lawyer and his office people can help you with. Anyway, there will be a section there where you have to list your pre-existing conditions. And for example, if you've had some kind of surgery like an appendectomy, orchidectomy, lobotomy, whatever, you'll have to name and give out the dats of the doctor or surgeon who treated it. By the way, if you're wondering what an orchidectomy is, millions of woke American men have undergone the virtual version of that. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, it's not on the surgical menu at all. The macho world would not have it. Anyway, once down here and signing up for a new insurance policy, private insurance that is, there will be a place to list your pre-existing conditions. That would be surgeries, or let's say you had diabetes, kidney stones, heart stents, whatever. Now, if you're 100% on the up and up, a straight arrow person who never lies or fibs about a thing, you can write every little scrape, bruise, infection, or surgery you've had. Or you can be kind of vague and uncommittal about the whole thing. In any event, no one's going to ever check with previous doctors and hospitals back in the U.S., Europe, or Canada. For one thing, the correspondence would have to take place in English, and the paper pushers at the insurance companies here in Latin America only speak Spanish. Though some of their bosses might speak English, the paper pushers, no. Secondly, with the doctor-patient relationship in the States, that privacy stuff, even if the insurance bureaucrats here in Latin America got a letter off or an email or whatever in English to one of the doctors, clinics, or hospitals you put on the form, they're not going to release that information unless some certified document that's signed and sealed by you is forwarded along with that request, and that just never happens. So unlike up in the States, where if you BS or admit critical, even not so critical data on an insurance application form, if they find out, they can cut you off at any time. But that won't happen down here. So then you might ask, am I advising you to leave that section blank on the application form? Well, let's put it this way. If you've got scars that prove you had some kind of arthroscopic surgery on your knee, you better put that down because your doc's going to see it. Duh. If you've had your appendix out or a kidney removed, man, that's easily noticeable. The thing is, though, most gringos and expats who are well along on their plan B are probably 50 years or older, so they're 5 for 50. And certainly have had a couple of surgeries. Truthfully, if you've got a long list of procedures that have been done on you, the insurance company just might reject your application out of hand. They want to make money on you, not lose it. Now, again, I'd never advise you to do anything illegal, but I'll tell you what a lot of expats do. they'll put down the pre-existing conditions that are obvious. Things that may have left a scar, let's say. Or things like stents or dental implants that can be detected by scans or radiographs. The fact is, if you're a gringo 50 years or older, you're on meds and you probably had some surgeries. So it's kind of a balancing act what you're going to put on that form. You don't want to kill your chances right out of the box. The really good thing about Latin American private insurance policies is that all of them will cover pre-existing conditions after 6 months or a year. So the key is to get that policy signed, sealed, and delivered. Once you're on, you're on. They can't kick you off, as long as you keep paying the premiums. Now, one of the key things that could get you disqualified right away is if you have diabetes or high blood pressure. However, let's say you have diabetes and it's controlled, and or high blood pressure and it's controlled by pills, whatever. Then, for sure, your lab tests will show up normal. However, if you're fully honest and put down on the form that you have diabetes, but you're taking insulin and you have high blood pressure, but it's controlled with medication, guess what? They'll reject you. However, if you were in a mental cloud that day and carelessly omitted to put that down on the form, you'll be in. So then you're probably thinking, what happens a couple of 3 months or 6 months or 8 months down the line when you're on the plan and you have to go to a cardiologist to get checked out and have those blood pressure meds renewed or your insulin profile checked? Should you be nervous? Not to worry. Insurance companies are never, ever involved with that kind of stuff at all. They just pay the bills. If a doctor writes a script, when you take it to the pharmacy, you hand over your insurance card, they generally pick up 80% of it and you're off to the races. Believe me, no one's ever going to say, hey, you didn't put this down on your form as a pre-existing condition. Again, like I said, once you're in, you're in. Though, of course, as you surely know, insurance companies work in mysterious ways. For example, if you have had some heart stents and are applying for insurance, one insurance company might say, no way, and another might say, come on in, glad to have you. Though there are some Latin American countries that have some weird guidelines when it comes to pre-existing conditions. For example, once again, Ecuador. If when you're initially signing up for an insurance policy, if you list your pre-existing conditions, they'll cover them after 12 or sometimes 24 months, depending on the policy, but they'll put a limit on the lifetime coverage of each pre-existing condition you list. In fact, I'm looking at one health insurance policy from Ecuador right now. If you put down a pre-existing condition, they'll limit the monetary value of the coverage. The policy says if anything comes up that's related to that pre-existing condition, they'll only cover it up to $8,500. Let's say you have a pre-existing prosthetic knee. You're on your new policy, you've been down there 2 years, and something goes wrong, it gets infected, whatever. Well, you're covered up to $8,500. Which doesn't sound like much. That's what a box of Kleenex costs in a hospital in the States, right? Well, it's always important to remember that the cost of almost any medical procedure down here, including doctor's visits, hospital stays, etc., are generally about 1/4 to 1/6 the cost of the same thing up in the States. So, for example, $8,500 for a pre-existing condition would be more like $40,000 up in the States. I know it's hard to get used to thinking in those terms, but it's a hump all of us have to get over. And that's one of the reasons why so many gringos and expats come down here. Even if they can't qualify for insurance, they don't seem to mind. Even if they've had a pretty serious previous condition, like a heart attack. I personally know lots of gringos and expats who don't have insurance at all. They pay out of pocket because they say it's so cheap. Why not? Though it's funny, people don't like to use the word cheap down here. The word cheap is barato in Spanish, and it's kind of a crude word, kind of an ugly word. So instead, Latinos like to use the word economical, which is economical. In other words, hospitals aren't cheap. They're economical. That word is more soothing to the ear, isn't it? Now, as for me, I'm a good example of this. I switched insurance companies about 4.5 years ago. And with that second insurance company, the newer one, I never put down on the form I was hospitalized for a kidney stone many years earlier under the previous policy. Nor did I put down that I had at least 10 little precancerous skin lesions burned off. Funny thing, too, on the new policy, I had a couple of more skin lesions, went to the dermatologist. For stuff like that, they pre-authorize it if it's not an emergency, you know. The pre-authorized work was approved, and I went in and got them burned off again. They weren't really burnt off. They were cryogenically removed. They paid 80%. I've got one of those policies where my copay is 20%. But that's because I went to my dermatologist, the one I selected, a lady who was outside my plan. If I would have gone to a doctor within my plan, someone on their list of 100 or so docs, they'd have paid 100%. But, you know, if you're used to your doc, you like your doc, and you've got a good relationship with him or her, why switch? So the bottom line is here, don't get too rattled about pre-existing conditions when signing up for a new policy. Unless, of course, you've had heart surgery or a kidney transplant or something, then I'd say all bets are off. All right, moving on. Meanwhile, back in Ecuador, you know, these politicians, they're really skunks, every last one of them. Turns out, just this week, February 23rd, in fact, former President Lenin Moreno, his wife, and 36 others have been charged with bribery in connection with the construction of the Cococudio Sinclair Hydroelectric Project. According to a press release that just came out from the Ecuador Attorney General's office, the case stems from an investigation of offshore companies who concealed illicit payments from a Chinese contractor between 2009 and 2018, when Moreno was vice president under President Rafael Correa, who is also on the run and hiding in Switzerland. His wife is Swiss, so he can't be extradited. The Attorney General also says, in addition to Moreno, his wife, Rocio Gonzalez, and daughter, Irna Moreno, two brothers, and two sisters-in-laws are also being charged with those crimes. That, according to prosecutors. Then it says, the bribery charges against Moreno first surfaced in early 2019 when the so-called INA papers, based on the name of a company registered in Belize and Panama, showed a link between Moreno's family members and the Chinese Cococudio Sinclair contractor, Sinhydro. According to this information published in La Fuente website, the contractor deposited $18 million in a Panamanian bank account that was then dispersed to other offshore accounts. The total, prosecutors say, was estimated at $76 million in bribes. Then it says, since 2021, Moreno lived in the United States. Big surprise, huh? Oh, and I don't know if you saw this, but former Mexican security czar, he was a cabinet-level position in the Mexican government. He just got convicted up in the States for embezzling $450 million. He, too, was living in the U.S. You know, we've talked about this before, how the U.S. government has the nerve to call out corruption south of the border. Yet they give all these psychopathic and sociopathic a-holes permanent visas and let them live in the U.S. while they're on the run from their own countries. Meanwhile, people think the Ukraine, Russia, or Mexico are the most corrupt countries in the world. They're so wrong, it's the U.S. Oops, we're getting to the end, so I'm done ranting. Though, do remember my March 2023 Expat Insider Seminars coming up in about 3 weeks. You can still get on board. Just go to expatplanb.com for all the info and sign-up details.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.